So we are resuming our workshops for us a little bit earlier than most would like in the morning, but nevertheless. I'm here with Andreas Kreitzis from Syriza. He is a member of the Central Committee and the coordinator of the Political Campaign Committee. Syriza formed in 2004. It is a coalition left party, and it is the main opposition party in Greece. And beyond that, Andreas will be describing, just in general, what is Syriza, its tactics, its strategy. I'm sure in Q&A, he would be happy to address questions about its history, how it interacts with various social movements, etc. So he will be speaking for as long as 30 minutes, but please feel free to shorten that as you like. I just want to make sure that we have plenty of time for Q&A. And after your presentation, we'll be beginning the Q&A, and as moderator, I will assert the right to ask the first question. But beyond that, also we'll be taking questions from the audience.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to present what we are trying to do in Greece. It's a special occasion. I mean, the major thing that we accomplished, in a sense, is that we are a leading political formation in our country, which was unprecedented, we didn't expect it. So I will try to answer why Syriza and why not some other political formation would have this huge advance in its influence in Greek society. I'm not going to focus on the dispute regarding the effect, the results, and the alternatives on the memorandum policy in Greece or in the south of Europe in general. I will focus on Syriza, on its political route and action, in a way that will help us approach why Syriza is today what it is. I am going to present you some moments of the historical path from which Syriza comes from. In doing so, I'm going to pinpoint these features that played an important role in the rise of Syriza, the last few years. The first question will be, that I will attempt to answer, is where did Syriza come from? The second question would be, what did Syriza do from 2010 till today? Let's say. And the last, what did Syriza do during the memorandum policies, okay, the implementation of memorandum policies, that is how did Syriza manage to actualize the potentiality of being a leading political formation, okay, because you have potential, but you do something in order to actualize that, okay, so I'm going to answer this question, and then the third question, if I have time, and you are generous, what is Syriza doing today, what is Syriza doing today as a continuation and upgrading of what made Syriza what it is on a more demanding, of course, level of political fight. Okay, so Syriza. Syriza was formed as a coalition, as Nate said, of the radical left in 2004. Several organizations of the left and activists from the radical ecology, participated in it, while the biggest party of the coalition was Synaspismos, which means coalition in Greek. Synaspismos was formed in 1992 from several splits of the Orthodox Communist Party through the previous years. I'm not going to say a lot of things about these various splits, which is a common habit in the left. I will briefly say a few things for the first serious split, because it determined the physiognomy of the current of the left that Syriza comes from, mainly. In 1968, during the dictatorship, in the middle of persecutions and exiles, a split, of course, took place in the Communist Party. Two Communist parties were formed, the Orthodox one, which supported the Soviet Union, and the Communist Party of the Interior, that was its name, which was critical of the Soviet Union and was oriented towards the kind of Eurocommunism, together with the Italian and other communist parties in Western Europe. The renewing Communist Party lost the hegemony in the left from the Orthodox Communist Party after the fall of the dictatorship, and in the dawn of the third Greek democracy, the renewing Communist Party didn't manage to be an important political factor, except maybe in the youth movement, in which it always had some influence due to mainly cultural reasons. It was more open to new kinds of thought, life, and stuff like that. From this period of time, it is interesting to note that the renewing Communist Party was in favor of the entrance of Greece in the European Economic Community, which was the ancestor of the European Union. And that position, that political decision, was an exception in the left, since both Orthodox Communists and center-left Social Democrats, they all were against it. The reason for that decision could be summarized as follows. The participation in the European environment will guarantee, that was the argument, democracy and national integrity in Greece, while at the same time it was thought that strategically the Greeks are part of the European people. The fact that it was mainly, the European Economic Community was mainly a decision and an economic union of the European capitalist elites, was considered by this party as part of the battle that Europeans should give together inside the newly born community. So I'm stressing this historical fact because it is not strange today that today, and certainly it is not a lie, as our opponents in Greece claim, that Syriza, the political expression of this current of left, or the left, deploys today a European strategy for the debt crisis in Greece. Let me say, of course, that the reasoning today is somewhat different. The idea is, in a nutshell, that today, because of the interdependency of the economies, together with the superior financial and political firepower of global markets, suggests that there's no way a small nation can stand up and prevent, as I said yesterday also, its enslavement, when at the same time nothing similar is happening around it. And that is the idea, based on this fact or assessment, we believe strongly that we need a common strategy for the European nations in order to create the conditions to fight back the neoliberal strategy. Okay. Now, as I said before, several splits took place until 1992, the year in which Nasthismos, the biggest party, I remind you, of today's Syriza, was formed by the union of the parts of these various splits of the Orthodox Communist Party. The initial strategic goal of Synaspismos was just the progressive modernization of this. Because of the neoliberal advance during the 90s, the party gradually radicalized, and at the end of the 90s, the strategic aim of socialism with democracy and freedom appeared again in its documents. However, the influence of the party was marginal before the crisis, 3-5% in national elections from 1993 till 2009. However, there are some crucial moments for its physiognomy during these years that explain in part why today it is a leading political formation. The first crucial feature is its existence and endurance through these 20 difficult for the left years. It is hard to exaggerate the magnitude of the importance of the political left for the people's interests, the existence of political left. There was a determination of the left people who comprised the party to maintain its existence, even though it wasn't clear why and for what reason. There was already an Orthodox Communist Party and a Social Democratic Party, covering all the preferences of either the revolutionaries or the moderate supporters of the left. So what did Syriza have to offer? From the beginning, the core idea was that in the 20th century, both of these left traditions failed, and Synaspismos was taking on the task of shaping a new methodology, conception, and organization for the left, transcending, so to speak, creatively these traditions. In reality, however, there was always an internal tension, between poles attracted to these two traditions, rendering internal conflicts in the party a permanent situation. The endurance of the party and its gradual radicalization could not be taken for granted. Let me remind you that I'm talking about the period immediately after the formal fall of Soviet Union, that symbolically enacted an ideological tsunami that swept every emancipatory vision and voice of resistance away. I'm skipping some of this stuff. Okay. So the psychological pressure of the huge failure of the 20th century, together with the seemingly pointless status of any fight anymore during these years, and the attractions and the attraction to the other more powerful traditions, and so on, render the endurance of this current of the political left, even in its marginal size, literally an achievement. This is the first feature that we were there when the crisis began. The second feature is that it sees as openness to social processes and movements. The core idea here is that the political left has not an a priori vanguard role. Even though political left structurally represents social resistance on the political level, and through this structural function enforces their impact, and even though it has a wider perspective from partial social movements, that doesn't mean that it has the proper line in its occasion. The vanguard role, if there is one, should be justified by hard work inside social movements through an honest effort to make this effective, accepting as positive different perspectives inside the movements, as positive, not as something that we have to tolerate. Okay? Perspectives that may grasp aspects of reality the political left may not be in touch with, working with them on an equal basis, and so on. Okay. The anti-globalization movement and the global and European social forums, in which Syriza was nearly the only Greek left political force that participated, was a crucial saving experience for us and a training to this new relation with other movements and collectivities. So gradually, the members of the party were trained to this new methodology, and the local branches developed in time real connections with local movements. And as a result, the spontaneous mistrust towards political parties gradually didn't include Syriza, which was becoming in time something different in people's minds. But this was not only to be a different party, to be something peculiar, it had negative instances. Let me tell you two of them. A majority of people in Greece never understood why a small political party opposed the Olympic Games in Athens in 2004, and why it opposed a few years later, the building of a new stadium for the bigger soccer team of Athens in defense of the environment, the fiscal stability of the state, and the different model of development, with obvious negative results for its popularity. That's why it is a total lie that today Syriza supports, as our opponents claim in Greece, every demand in a populist way, in order to benefit from the tragic situation in Greece. So we were a small party, and we were against something that to several things like the Olympic Games, and that was very unpopular, and that was a very strange attitude on behalf of a party, one which they didn't conform to the widespread conception that the parties are basically trying to gain popularity. Okay, so Syriza was becoming something different. Let me point out here, however, that Synaspismos and Syriza were open to the social workings, but not always in a conscious way, as I presented until now. The renewing communist origin and the idea that the left must be re-established somehow, we have to change several things, together with the difficulties the left faced during this period of time, created serious difficulties to the party. The local branches were thin. Our impact at the central political stage was weak and hard to distinguish, and so on. However, these disadvantages surprisingly added up to a very crucial advantage. The party was amenable to change, it was amenable to new influences, and it was an organization in which the active resistances from below could affect it. So the organizational weakness rendered this party the only party that it was in contact with the social workings, and this is one of the main reasons why today is at the center of the political life. I think that this is something, I mean, it happened by accident. We thought that we had a problem, and because of our problem, something would happen. So we have to think, we have to examine theoretically this experience regarding the organizational status of the political left in the future. Now, moreover, two advantages. On the one hand, the existence of the Orthodox Communist Party, the existence and its power, because it was a party bigger than ours, reminded us all the time what we should never forget, the path we should never follow again. And on the other hand, the neoliberal transformation of the Social Democrats reminded us all the time that there is no way to compromise in a non-functional way with the neoliberal orthodoxy. So, for us, thankfully, deprived of these illusions, because they are in front of us, and we didn't have any illusion what is going to happen. We're witnessing what is happening. So, deprived of these illusions, there was only one way to move forward towards a new left identity, even though we didn't know where to head. Okay. Another important point is that Synaspismos deployed a strategy for the unity of the left, which is very important. The basic reason was that all versions of the left were defeated. So there was no point in arguing who was less wrong. Okay. So we proposed that all versions of the left should join their small forces in order to build a new left. SYRIZA was the outcome of a long and painful effort in this direction. Thankfully, this line of unity inspired and organized again what we call in Greece the people of the left, meaning the ones that didn't belong to a specific existing organization. This was a crucial wager for us, since the left didn't have the luxury, because of its size, to leave one part of its militants inactive. It is interesting to note that the components of SYRIZA were those organizations of different traditions of the left, Trotskyists, Maoists, radical Corporatists, even Orthodox Communists, that were those organizations that participated also in the workings of the anti-globalization movement. So there were Maoist organizations that were against anti-globalization movement, and these were hostile to our call for unity, and there are other Maoist organizations who participated in the anti-globalization movement, and they were friendly to our call for unity. Another crucial point, feature, was the active role of Synaspismos in building a European political alliance of the left, apart from the social workings in the social forum, European social forum, and European trade unions. Today there is the party of the European left. This is an existing party. Okay. It is of extreme importance to have this European political expression of the left today, in the dark days where the nationalistic feelings lurk in European societies, and fascism is threatening once again the continent, despite its obvious, of course, feebleness against the neoliberal hegemony. It is the only European political formation that really cares for the common future of the European people, an indication of the pathetic situation we are today in Europe. One last feature, is the strong connection with the youth, a connection which came to the movement. In 2006 and 2007, SYRIZA supported the huge fights of the student movement against the constitutional change of transforming the university education into a commodity. a hopeless fight because of the widespread political consensus in favor of the change due to the neoliberal hegemony. Syriza clashed very hard with the political establishment at the central political stage, supported with no reservations the movement from the inside and from outside, organizing more than 100 social events in all over the country in an effort to make the rest of the society supportive of the movement. And after 10 months of fighting, in the end, the movement was victorious and the change was rejected. Another incident. In December of 2008, the murder of a schoolboy by a police officer in Athens ignited an uprising of the youth, an outburst of violence and rage in all over the country. Okay. At the political level, the whole political spectrum, even the Orthodox Communist Party, was unable to understand what is going on in Greek youth. And they focused on violence and they were hostile and derogatory about the youth and its lack of respect and discipline. Syriza refused to contend to such a simplistic narrative. He refused to contend to such a simplistic narrative. It claimed that the outburst was a symptom of a social pathology with political causes. It accused the political establishment, the neoliberal political establishment, for the death of the youth. And while it didn't justify any form of violence, Syriza tried to hear what the youth violence was trying to say. Syriza was accused of being sympathetic to violence, of course. Slanderous attack was coming from all across the board and by the media, the political parties, the organic intellectuals of the system. And that was a scene from our future, the one in which we live today. The last but not least, about the connection between the Syriza and the youth, is the appointment of the leadership of the party in 2008 of Alexis Tsipras, who was at the time 34 years old. Not so much in a symbolic way, which is of course important, but mostly because in the leadership of the party there was now a young man who, by definition, because of his own living experience, brings at the highest political level the predicament of a generation that has no future, because he is a member of the lost generation of the media. So just before the crisis, the debt crisis, and the outburst of the neoliberal revolution, Syriza was a small but peculiar party. It was characterized by strategic radicalization, sensitivity to social workings, presence in social movements, political determination against neoliberalism and the political establishment, commitment to the unity of the left and to the need for a new left identity. What did Syriza do from 2010 till today? When Troika, together with the domestic political and economic establishment, declared war against the Greek people, Syriza gradually became a tool at the hands of the people. However, the transformation into a political tool could not be taken for granted. It was a political victory of the left during the very hard fight. It was a successful outcome of various parameters. I will keep most of them. I will refer only to one. Enormous childish and for that reason crucial defense of fundamental values like dignity, democracy and so on against the inhuman logic of profit that cracked in the face to some extent its commonsensical appearance and for that reason attracted slanderous attacks against Syriza by the powerful media, almost by the entire political spectrum in Greece and the whole European political personnel. And that my only, there are six or seven of them, but I don't have time. After 2 years of hard fights, political collision and social frictions, 2 years of strikes, riots, local movements, spontaneous uprisings, and the overthrow of the first communal government, on May and June of 2012, the path became purely political during the elections. 11 months earlier, on July of 2011, right after the uprising of the Square Movement, Syriza, a party of 4%, decided that its goal is to form a social and political coalition that would attempt to seize power. Even though it sounded to all of us back then like wishful thinking, nevertheless, the urgency of the dramatic situation of the people rendered any other strategy pointless. So 11 months later, Syriza launched its electoral campaign, posing the goal of a left government. The political class was unprecedented. The slanders against Syriza, the threats to the people, the lies and the propaganda took the shape of an extreme biopolitical experiment. A big variety of methods and means were used in order to manipulate the people, the capitulation, and distort the obvious, that the austerity policy destroys people's lives. I'm skipping most of them. At the first elections, the experiment failed, but we had a second election in which the establishment upgraded the attack to Syriza and to the people. Syriza didn't support effectively, and the third pro-memorandum government was formed. This government continues steadily today the same destructive course, despite its promise for renegotiation between the two elections. Syriza took 27% of the votes and 71 seats in the parliament, and it is today the leading political formation of the opposition. Okay. I don't have time, so for the third question, what is Syriza doing today? Let me say a few things. Okay. The situation is pretty bad in Greece. Okay, I will skip details. If you want, I can tell you later. The major problem is that in this social context, this task force one, the basic standards of life and the standard cognitive maps of the people, the ones of consumerist, spectacular capitalism that were dominant before the crisis in Greece, have collapsed, leaving the people totally disoriented and terrified. Having been immersed in the ideological cosiness of the previous years, they did not have the resources to create a meaningful narrative of what is going on. At this point, nationalism, racism, and Nazism offer valuable ideological backup to the ruined neoliberal consensus through explanations that do not affect the neoliberal logic. So, extended disaster and lack of means of handling it shapes a very fragile social condition. Anger and rage give their seats to depression and withdrawal, and vice versa, while the fall is accelerating. The left, what we are trying to do, is trying to create new meaning, awareness, and social practices according to its values and logic, with results that do not correspond to the magnitude of the problem. To transubstantiate the negative feelings and the apolitical outburst into a positive stance, political effectiveness, and organized fights, which are requirements in order to face the superior firepower and the determination of the neoliberal revolutionaries. Needless to say that the effort to upgrade the political and social consciousness of the fighting people is understood as a two-way process through which the left is also learning how to be useful in the new conditions. The third pro-memorandum government, apart from continuing steadily the disastrous memorandum policy, is trying to affect the negative change of balance of forces by launching a far-right attack to the people and the left. Civil war rhetoric, brutal police repression, authoritarian mode of government, defiance of democratic institutional function, tolerance and indirect support of neo-Nazi activity, etc. At the same time, the mass media, which is a pretty big problem, problem in Greece for us, the mass media owned mainly by oligarchs who are responsible for the fiscal derailment of the state, devote themselves to slandering against every section of people who dare to resist, and especially Syriza, were accused of supporting terrorism, violent acts and criminal activity, who are working for dark forces who want to destroy Greece, at the same time who are pawns of Obama, who obey secretly Mrs. Merkel, and who are fooling poor Greek voters, etc. On the one hand, and I'm just taking two minutes, the strategy of creating tension aim at opening a gap between Syriza and the conservative sections of the masses, and eventually get them against the left. The strategy tries to undercut the capacity of Syriza to form a left government. On the other hand, by accusing Syriza that it belongs to the political establishment, the aim is to cut Syriza off the resisting part of the people, the movements, and the rest of the left, and by doing this to transform Syriza into a toothless political personnel, unable to threaten the domestic establishment and the broader neoliberal European strategy of austerity. Because the crucial feature of Syriza is that it combines the possibility of forming a government with the strong connections with the resisting part of the people. But the problem is that the shrinking of democracy in order to implement a totally disastrous policy and the strategy of creating tension causes serious serious problems to the democratic constitution of the states, and that's something that we are very worried about. Okay, because, I mean, the strategy of creating tension pushes desperate people to fascism. Neo-Nazis today infiltrate the police and the army, and they determine the social trend through the media. The logic of law and order replaces the rule of law. Police brutality and arbitrariness is taken to bigger and commonsensical regularity. The parliament is practically inactive. The corruption is becoming the necessary tool to make things happen in such a mess. And the general atmosphere in the country is that civil and political rights are a luxury that it cannot be tolerated anymore. Okay. Threefold strategy for Syriza after the election, I mean the last year. First, political fight to overthrow the government, social resistance to block the neoliberal policy, austerity, privatizations, etc., and expansions of social solidarity networks for the restoration of dignity and morale of the people. At the same time, after the election, we are active in building social fronts against neo-Nazis in neighborhoods, schools, and workplaces, and while working on our program, our negotiating strategy with the lenders, the first move of the government, the productive reorganization of the economy, the checking of the humanitarian crisis. Syriza has today around 30,000 members. In 2010, it has 10,000 members, 480 local branches, a central committee of 315 members. And I will stop here because I already.
We started a little later. Thank you. We'll begin. I might slightly abuse my privilege by asking a two-part question, but I'll try to keep it short. Please do keep questions as brief as possible. Just kind of trying to address what might, for some people, be kind of the elephant in the room, which is, you know, the prospects of an alliance between Syriza and Enel. And Enel, the that broke from New York Democracy.
Okay.
Right.
Independent Greeks.
What's that?
Independent Greeks.
Yes.
Is
yes.
Mm-hmm.
And which you know is many leftists consider a very nationalistic group and sort of a right wing group that sort of broke from the conservative government but only but broke to the right. So my question would be, what are the sort of prospects of that? Of an alliance there, which sort of took shape at the end of last month, very recently. What does Syriza wish to gain by that, and how does that relate to your ultimate goals and strategies? More generally, but I think relatedly, how does one distinguish between opposition to neoliberalism from the left versus opposition to neoliberalism from the right? Do you see that as a major problem? If not, why, and if so, how do you negotiate that problem politically?
First of all, this party is a neoliberal party, and they are just because of the dramatic situation in Greece, they oppose the effects of their own ideology, which is contradiction. But okay, so they are far right in terms of national affairs. The problems with TPP and other. Neighbors, they are neoliberals, and they are deploying the following strategy. A lot of people, conservative people, don't want anymore this policy, but the major conservative party is deploying it. So, what they are doing, they are saying that okay, we want to stop this policy. Of course, Syriza is going to do it, but you are a conservative guy, you don't like the left. Party, you don't want to vote for them, So I am saying to the people, to the conservative audience, that I will support this party, the left party, guaranteeing several things, patriotic stance to several issues, because we will be part of the government or part of the alliance that supports the government. And that's their strategy. Okay, we don't have an alliance with them officially. We are collaborating in several issues in the parliament, Mainly they are following us, because we are doing something. We are the major party in the position. We are doing something and they are backing up. So there is no collaboration. What is our objective, what is our goal is to be so strong so that we will not be needing their help in forming a government. However, if after the election Syriza will be the first party, it is mandatory to find a way to form a government. We hope that we will not be in the difficult position and situation to negotiate with this party in order to support the government. But it's not our objective or our strategy to have an alliance with a party of this kind. And the broad question. Okay, I'm not sure if you can be a right-wing party, a conservative party, a party of the capital, of the bourgeois class, and to be against neoliberalism. I know that conservatives here in the United States are trying to do it. They whine that the traditions and the family relations are being broken down by capitalism, and at the same time they support all the financial principles that neoliberalism is deploying. And this is a contradiction. It's not. I don't believe that you can be a right wing party or a conservative party if you really, truly are against neoliberalism. So, in this case, it would be very difficult to have a governmental policy which is against neoliberalism, together with parties that they say but they don't really are against this kind of policy. If that's
an answer. So you don't see that as a major problem. Distinguishing between the two.
I'm saying the major problem for whom?
For the left, yes.
It's a major problem to be, you cannot implement an anti-neoliberalist policy with parties that they don't really are against neoliberalism. That's what I'm saying. Because I don't believe and I don't think that it's possible to be a conservative party that, and at the same time, you will be really, truly, fundamentally against neoliberalism. Even neo-Nazis in Greece are finding a new way of, they are not socialist in a sense, that, I mean, national socialist like the 20s. They are national neoliberals, because they are trying and they are doing it effectively to conform with the basic neoliberal principles in economy. And that's amazing. I mean, that's why I'm saying that it's not easy and possible to have a right-wing party being truly against neoliberalism. So, for us, a policy against neoliberalism cannot be done in alliance with a part of this kind.
Okay, we'll take questions from the audience now. Start here.
So, very short question. I'm wondering, sort of, in Greece, is Syriza, or how is Syriza fighting the fascists on the streets, given that they specifically kind of have a policy of, they're also trying to fill in those fissures that this austerity has created, creating food banks, this kind of soft fascism. What's the struggle in the streets like? Because you see news, you see protests, you see racist pogroms against immigrants by Golden Dawn.
Our strategy is the following. We are trying to build social fronts in the neighborhoods. We are avoiding political members of the political parties that support the memorandum policy for obvious reasons, because the Golden Dawn is arguing that they are, and only they are against the system. We are part of the system, according to them. So we are trying to build social fronts with from our political organizations of the left and other more libertarian organizations, with the teachers, with the trade unions, other local initiatives for several topics. So we are doing it. It is effective, but not sufficient to stop their spreading. But we have already restricted their activity. Okay. So, but we cannot stop their advance because the public, some of the major media and newspapers are very fond of them. There are strong connections between members and part of the economic elite with them. They are having strong connections to the police and maybe to the army. I'm not aware. We don't know. For the police, we have indications. What else? Okay, there are things are getting really bad sometimes. You know, about fightings on the streets in several neighborhoods. I don't know if you need someone with information.
A quick follow-up question, because I'm curious. There's all these, we get very scattered information on Greece filtering out the English press. What's the organization, what's the position of the Greek Orthodox Church in this case?
Yeah, that's a very crucial thing, and it was very helpful. They were against. They were, I mean, the official church said that they are against our religion, we are supporter of this, and that was very crucial. Of course, there are members of the leadership of the church who are very fond of Golden Dawn. Let me tell you that we believe that we cannot defeat fascism or neo-Nazism without solving the social problem, without stopping the neoliberal policy. There is no way to stop them. I mean, they are going together with the disaster of society. So you cannot achieve having a dismantled society and without the emergence of fascism in some form.
Okay, we'll take the we'll just go from right to left. Mr. Jindin, I believe, friend, and then I'm afraid Dunne, and then Dave, and then Subar.
Can you tell us something about how this whole process has transformed the unions or not transformed them?
Trade
unions.
The trade unions.
Okay. How then?
How this whole process?
This whole process. Okay. A few days ago, there was a congress of the Confederation of trade unions in Greece. The sad thing is that the representatives of the conference, of the convention, were elected before the crisis in 2009, which is crazy, I know. But the trade unions in Greece are being controlled for decades by the Social Democrats, which was the party that literally led Greece into IMF. Okay, the first pro-memorandum government was a government of social democrats. So things are not so good on our official labor movement, let's say. There are initiatives from below. They are not very strong, but they are very militant, and we need that because of the situation. They are very they are ready to do things that normally trade unions don't do. So that's the good thing. But the bad thing is that the institution of official labor movement today, three years after the beginning of memorandum policies in a society which is practically dismantled. We are talking about 30% unemployment official, which means it's much higher, and 60% unemployment in the youth. We are talking about a very hard situation, and it's a problem that we don't have the support in this fight against this policy of the official labor movement in Greece.
Yeah, my question is also about the trade unions, but more in Syriza's relationship to basically the point of production in the class struggle. Like, and something I don't hear as much is I would like to know more about what the actual strategy is in terms of moving the trade union movement, which I know is traditionally more KKPASSA, and what's Syriza doing? Is it building up workers' caucuses? Is it trying to win elections? Like, is there a coordinated strategy going on?
Okay, the major problem of the official, let's say, labor movement, in which parties like the ones that you were discussing are more about on your mind, is that they do not have any connection with the new, let's say, generation of workers, that they were working in a precarious status, that the transition in and out of the work is a permanent transition before crisis.
The stages.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying all this new, this new model of employee, that you are working two or three jobs this year, next year you have nothing, your income is not dependent on what you are what is your job. So the official labor movement has no connection with that. Okay, it's the same thing as I described before on the political level. Since I was the only party that it was open to the social workers, okay, we didn't have the same success on the social level, on the level of organizing the new generation of workers in these conditions. We didn't succeed, okay. But the other two parties that they are controlling the official labor movement, they are blind to the problem about this new generation of workers. We tried with our small forces in the traditional labor movement to make them be more open to this new generation, but it wasn't easy, mainly on behalf of the social democrats. You know, class struggle has a dimension of age today in the developed world, in Greece, I don't know. I mean, if you are younger, you are working in worse conditions, your salary is smaller and stuff like that. Okay. All these stuff belong to the past, before there are state policies. Because today, there is no labor movement, because there is no legislation in order to fight for something, and with unemployment, so high unemployment, there is no morale from the people to fight for something. You know, unemployment lingers everywhere, people are afraid, trade unionists are being prosecuted, as I heard. We had two incidents yesterday, or the day before yesterday. Two were being prosecuted because they did something 9 months ago. I mean, the justice is more hard against what we used to do, and it was a problem.
Hi, I'm Lori from Podcast in London. This is a question that's lingering from last night, the idea of the left in power, that I feel wasn't answered or addressed. What would, so if Syriza wins the next elections, What are the first measures of policy, of alliances, of government building that Syriza would take? I remember the last elections, there was a lot of conversation about whether or not Syriza would default and break away from the European Union, for example. I mean, is that still something that's present as like a measure of policy? And so, but I'm particularly curious as sort of like, if Syriza wins, what will we see Syriza do in its first weeks?
Yes, nobody knows. because we don't know the reactions. You know, we are not alone. We don't know the reactions. I'm going to say to you our major guidelines, okay, what we will do, and we will
What would you like to do? And we will see what will happen.
I cannot answer to you what we will do to answer the answer of our previous action. We are going to do something. The lenders were going to do something that we don't know, and then we will respond to them. The latter one I cannot tell you because we don't know what exactly they are going to do. What we are going to do for sure is that we will stop austerity policy in Greece because it's crazy to continue. Okay, it's destroying. There is no one who disagrees. It's a global economic fact that this policy has failed. It destroyed the country instead of rescuing it. Okay, the debt is rising. The economy collapsed. I cannot see how not a left party but any party of this country would like to continue this policy. Okay, that's one part. Then we will try to renegotiate the loan agreement because there is a problem of liquidity in Greek economy. We don't have a central bank, and we cannot go to the markets to lend money. So we need liquidity, okay? And we will renegotiate the terms for the loan agreement, okay? Considering the fact... Our central bank is part of the European Central Bank, and it's independent from the state power, as I was saying yesterday. Okay, so we don't know exactly what they were going to do because they have a lot of tools to make you accept what they want to accept, because they have the means, the liquidity, we don't have banks. You know, it will be a pretty difficult situation, but if you want, in a nutshell, to say to you what we will do for the major problem of Greece is stop the memorandum policy, renegotiating for the loan agreement and the liquidity of the economy, and then take extra measures in order to be able to change the reason why Greece today is in silence. The reason, aside other reasons, I mean, the domestic reason is that it was a neoliberal economy, okay, and not an economy, a Soviet economy, as our opponents say. It was a neoliberal economy, and we need drastic reorientation of the economic and productive model, and we need a drastic redistribution of the wealth that is produced and the control of the production. So that's our major guidelines. But these are things that we can do after the agreement with the lenders, because before that there will be a time of negotiation in which it will not be a normal situation, as you can imagine. Threats and sanctions will be imposed. We have to find unorthodox ways to respond to that. But I don't want to be very, you know, we can imagine a lot of things. We will see what could happen.
I just follow up. I'm really, a lot through Europe as a whole, not only Greece, but inspired by Greece, you know, anti-austerity or resistance to austerity is kind of like the call of the left. I really want to know, what is the alternative? The strange thing is that you are basically going to still be put in a situation where you're going to have to negotiate with neoliberals, the conditions that they put you under. So what is the alternative, really, beyond just having to negotiate the conditions of like neoliberal imposing itself under your country?
Things are difficult because the balance of forces in the continent is very negative. Okay. But what we need is to stop austerity, to do moderate moves in the sense of taking back powers under democratic control, which is not so, I mean, social democrats do it, not radically. That's what I mean, that the balance of force are very negative. When you are in the position, the pathetic position, to give a fight which is not yours, right? I mean, it's a social democrat fight. I mean, to fight for a control over the capital flows. It's not ours, okay? But we have to fight in Europe, in a European level, to restore several policies which are now under the economic elite, the control of the economic elite. Financing, liquidity, as I told you, the control of the European Central Bank. So we have this objective, because you said, what is the alternative? Okay. The alternative is, first, to do moderate things, which it will be casus belli for the neoliberal establishment in the European Union. But we know that we cannot go back. Our predicament is that we can move only forward. Okay, so we need not only moderate moves and restoration of state policy that can control capitalism to some extent, but we need to do more radical reforms in several domains. I will just mention one, which is very crucial. We have to detach, to wrest parts of the economy from the logic of profit. That would be a very major fight. I mean, you need to nationalize or to socialize, it depends on how you think about this. But you need, in a broader sense, let's say, to take under the democratic control and plan a part of the economy. Production, okay, and that's not something that we should do because we are very radical, but because we have to solve very real problems of the people. We have problems of feeding the population in Greece because with our economy, the agricultural section is destroyed. Okay, you cannot hope, as our opponents say and claim, that private investments and money owners will invest and will, at some point when my kid will be, I don't know, 18, if it ever happens, we will have the ability to produce what we need. Okay, we won't do that, but it doesn't work. So if we are going to try to organize an agricultural production based on social needs under democratic control of society. The crucial question, but it's not a question we can discuss now, is how can this be done specifically? Because, okay, I'm saying something. To say something is very easy. How you are doing that in a specific region, under specific difficult circumstances, you do not own the means that you need in order to produce. We know that multinational enterprises control this specific area of production. Okay, So we have to be more specific, but the general idea is that we will do, and we will try to form an alliance, a European alliance, in order to deploy moderate moves, you know, as I was saying, and radical reforms in order to be able to respond to the social needs, not to our willingness to be more radical.
Yes, I was wondering, Andreas, if you could expand a little bit on your vision of socialism. You said that towards the end of the 1990s, Syriza moved from sort of an anti-neoliberal platform to a socialist platform. In what sense your vision of socialism is different from that of the KKE? Do you engage in open critique of so-called socialism of the 20th century? And if so, what lessons do you draw? I'm interested in that because our party in Quebec is trying to integrate elements of anti-capitalism in its platform. And the vision of what we mean by socialism is part of the debate. So I was wondering if you could explain a little bit what your vision is.
Yeah, look, my party, in a vague way, tries to say that you cannot have a better society if you do not enhance and develop democracy. Okay. And democracy is not a political system. Mm-hmm. Democracy is a way of doing things. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a way of taking decisions, of making decisions. Okay, so we need democracy, and that's what I mean when I'm saying democratic plan. We need democracy. Who decides what it will be produced, how it will be produced, and for whom? These are three crucial questions that we have to figure out as a civilization, as humanity, who and how we will decide these things. What, how, and for whom. And that's in a very vague way I would put it. And if we go to Soviet Union model, we will see how the answers to these questions, and we think that these are the wrong ones, the wrong answers to these questions, okay? Neoliberalism, of course, like Soviet Union, the same thing. Okay, the same thing, it's very interesting. You know, this crazy idea that you can automatize the decision-making process, okay? You can skip people, you have pure Marxist-Leninist economist or pure hardcore neoliberal technocrats, and they can do, and only them, they are authorized to make the decision, because they know. They are the same thing. The framework is the same, and the mindset, the idea, the approach to this problem. Okay, so that would be, and if the topic that you are opening is huge, okay, how decent, a simplified society will organize. Okay. Let me add just one feature that we should take in consideration. We should take in consideration that something that it wasn't on the table the decades before, some decades before, the finite limit of our physical environment. We are approaching a limit. So we are in the first time for the history of humanity, we have to find a way to organize a society that doesn't grow. It's something new, totally new. The history of humanity had never faced this problem because the environment was huge. You could go.
So
a dignified society, a society which will be a human society, is have to deal with this, and this is something the left hasn't been able to address the previous years.
Can I ask just a subsidiary question, very quickly? When I was in Durban about a year and a half ago, I spoke with people from an organization called the Democratic Left Front, which are trying to break away from the ANC, and the ANC, African National Congress, vision that South Africa is right now in the national democratic stage, and eventually it will get to socialism. And part of their critique of the ANC's program, they are formulating a vision of socialism as being eco-socialism or ecological socialism in the 21st century. Do these concepts have any relevance or any pertinence in Greece?
As I told you, every day this problem is more pressing, and it will be more pressing to us as well. I mean, the left in general, not only in Greece. We are giving huge fights about direction of the model of development. I told you before, but today also is happening in Greece. Because, you know, the idea is, neoliberals. We have massive unemployment. I don't care how, okay, let's keep it. I create it, but it doesn't matter. How we are going to solve it? I have an idea. Let's destroy the country by bringing investments that they want to destroy everything and to have. But what they are saying, we will have a job. Okay. We will have a job from an investment that after 10 years it will be over. I mean, take Spain for example. Mm-hmm. The tourist model, the developmental model of Spain was a failure, a huge failure in the Mediterranean coast. Okay. This is the model that today is proposing, they are proposing for Greece in this section of the economy. So we are giving these kind of fights. We are not able easily or effectively to connect it with broader environmental issues, how the civilization will go, the society will progress. But we are, it's part of the agenda already, so it's something that you should take a position and decide what you're going to do.
Okay, I think we will wrap this up here.
You talked about in I think 2011, the decision to seize power, and there was discussion a lot last night around the idea of the state being an expression of the balance of forces in society. The core and the essence of the state and political power is having a monopoly on legitimate use of armed force, that's the military and the police and the machinery of the courts and all that. And short of that being broken by under the old power of the old forces, any fundamental change is an illusion. And democracy, much of the upheaval in the world has been carried out under the banner of democracy. But in a society of deep, deep class antagonism, social inequalities, there is no such thing as any pure democracy. Democratic institutions and processes are part of a class rule. And part of the role of this democracy is actually to legitimize the existing order and channel discontent there. Just to take one example, in Egypt, since the overthrow of Mubarak, there have been 2 years of elections and constitutional assemblies and all that, and it's played a role of attempting to, and to some degree successfully, legitimizing the regime, which is the same economic, a regime representing the same economic and political forces that were in power with Mubarak. And just shortly, as an alternative to this idea, is in 1917, in April, when the Tsar was overthrown. And then there was an opening of certain multi-party democratic mechanisms of a certain sort. Because there was a communist leadership that did not go for that, but 6 months later there was able to be actually a genuine revolution that broke the old political economic power, and that opened up the possibility of really radical change in terms of changing the economy and the political system and emancipation.
Yeah. I think just so we make sure we get at least everything on record here.
I want to go back to this democracy thing a little bit, because we've been tossing that around a lot since yesterday. There's different kinds of democracy. There's participatory democracy, workers control. The real workers control that was pushed in, and this gentleman was talking about, was not simply decentralized, it was was also hierarchical. And more radical, the more sensible figures in the Communist Party actually wanted the linkage between the state and workers' control. That seems to be something that might be interesting to work on, which hasn't been worked on since 1919. But for your purposes, Andreas, I think most of these kinds of discussions are not very helpful. It's clear whether you're talking in Egypt, or you're talking in Greece, or you're talking in Italy, or you're talking in Spain. There's one kind of democracy which is being affected, and that is representative democracy. That's where the cuts are coming against. To make the I don't see, and I think that's what it has the support of the masses. There's no, it doesn't seem to me I've seen any, and I know the Egyptian situation pretty well. I don't see any conservative council going to like this at all, even from socialists. I think, first I'd like to know if that's true in Greece. Of course, we want you to live to answer the question. Yeah, first of all, is it true in Greece? And then secondly, if it is true what I'm saying, then you got to, what's obvious. A bourgeois democracy, and the explanations I've gotten or I've heard, I don't think they're on target either. What bourgeois democracy, capitalist democracy means is that the interests of capital, by definition, have to be served before any other interests are taken. Now, here is the, at least as I understand, if that's true, those interests of capital, collective capital, it needs a best basis of support that it doesn't have. And this is where the possibility of coalitions come through, either from the right or from the left. To think that it's possible to have any kind of support for representative democracy without that coalition, without in some way recognizing the reality of what a capitalist democracy is, I think it's not just not utopian, I just think it's foolish.
So, smashing state power and workers' councils. We started a little late, so I want to give you a response to these gentlemen's comments.
Okay, I'm not sure that I would make three comments. The first one is the distinction between representative democracy and direct democracy is not a distinction that separates left from the right. According to my opinion, okay, to my understanding, there are people on the right, and the right-wing people and ideologies that believe to direct democracy. Who? Neoliberals. Okay, they don't need to say things will be automatized and stuff like that. They are from below. They want the capitalism from below. There are right-wing ideologies that they strongly believe into, you know, liberalism, the traditional political liberalism that believe to representative democracy, people who are good, they bring their own in democracy and their interests and their national decide several things, stuff like that. And on the left, there are people who believe that we don't need representative democracy, we will be local communities. I strongly disagree with this opinion because I strongly believe that social division of labor is a very good thing, which is not a capitalist thing. Mm-hmm. It creates art, and before capitalism, and after capitalism, it creates art, but we need social division of labor. If you need social division of labor, you need a way to do it that could not concentrate power and wealth to some poor. Okay, so that's the problem according to one. But there are people in the left that believe that we represent the democracy is by definition a thing that we should abolish. Okay, I don't believe it. So we need a way to think. Not because today we are going right to build communism, but we have to, and it's an opportunity for us. Seizing the capitalist power, the capitalist
part of the capitalist power, let's say, because part of the capitalist power is to be to have a party. Part of the capitalist power is to have trade unions. Part of capitalist power is to breathe. Okay, if you stretch it. You can always read everything as part of the system. Okay, but the societies are very complex things. They are capitalist societies, but that doesn't mean that the capitalist logic exhausts reality. Okay. Yeah. It's the dominant way of thinking. It's the logic of organizing, of mediating things, but it's not. If you say, "Well, we are living in capitalism," you are saying nothing, because capitalism in Turkey is different from capitalism in Greece, and we are brothers, okay, we are near, because there is history, there are other things that make sense. Okay, I'm saying that my second point and the comment, and the third is, of course, about the army and the police and this kind of power of the state, as you. We can imagine we will not be able to control them in the sense of change them, or in the sense of the state has autonomous parts. They all take care of the reproduction of capitalism, okay, and the reproduction of the power of the economic elite. But they are autonomous. They are not, it's not like you are taking the government and immediately the army or the police are under your jurisdiction. There is a range of things that you can do. You cannot do whatever you want. You cannot abolish police, even if you believe that police is not necessary. Okay, so you cannot do it because the capital state has its own norms and specific features. You cannot change the state without changing the society and the mode, the logic of production, stuff like that. I'm not sure if that was the question, but let me give you an advice. It's not a very good thing to say that democracy or some kind of democracy or a fight for democracy is always a fight that and eventually will end up with the opponent to be victorious. Okay. It may seem like that, okay, you didn't abolish capitalism, but it's not the same thing to be in a dictatorship, to be in a democracy. It's not the same thing in a bourgeois democracy, a pseudo democracy. It's not the same thing at all, even for our cause. Okay, and I don't believe that if you push people, they are going to be more rebellious. Mm. It doesn't work like that. It's more complex. You have to find ways to be effective when you are having a restricted democracy or a dictatorship. You have to find ways to be effective when you have a flourishing bourgeois democracy. You have to, in any case, in any conjecture, you have to be effective in finding ways to go your course even further. The fight for democracy, in the very broad apolitical sense, is something that we could embrace and put it today, that we are defending democracy. Democracy is not something that is under threat because of the communists or the Reds. Mm-hmm. It's under threat by the neoliberals. That's why I was using in my lectures something that in Greece nobody would agree with me. I'm calling neoliberals as revolutionaries. In Greece, the traditional thing is to call them counter or anti-revolutionaries. Okay, but I strongly believe that we can do it. I mean, we can embrace the idea that we need a democratic constitutional society. This, to some extent, it was accomplished. Now they are taking back, because you can have democracy, and only people who have property of one considerable amount up can vote, can say, democracy, this is a democracy. An aristocratic way, I mean, a form, but it's democracy. You exclude somebody, one part of the population, but you have democracy. So which kind of democracy? We have Catholic, universal electoral rights today, in a sense, or in some sense, which is an achievement of the masses and not a trick of capitalism.
Sure.
During the last years, in 1920s, then we have fascist regimes in Europe. After 1945, we are having this kind of bourgeois pseudo-democracy. After huge fights, sacrifices, left people dying and tortured in order to have this. Okay, we didn't abolish capitalism, but the fight is going on. We should, and that's my final word, we should never give good things to capitalism. Okay, we should say that good things happen in this society despite the fact that it's a capitalist. Despite the fact. Okay, and now you're saying that now they are against democracy. It's not their accomplishment, it's not their achievement. The masses, the fights of the people and of the left that create this kind of, this version of capitalism.
Sure. Well, thanks for sticking with us longer.